Yes Music Podcast, episode 153. Relayer Revisited, part 2, Gates of Delirium.
This is John Davison, and you're listening to Yes Music Podcast.
Hi, this is Jeff Dales, and you're listening to Yes Music Podcast.
Hi, this is Steve Howe, and you're listening to me on the Yes Music Podcast. Have a good time. Listen. Bye.
Welcome to episode 153 of the Yes Music Podcast, one fan's exploration of the world's greatest progressive rock band. I'm your host, Kevin Mulrine. Please remember how you can get involved with the podcast via the various different ways on the site, as usual, yesmusicpodcast.com. I only discovered the yesworld.com page on the upcoming Relayer release this week. I'd visited before some time ago, but it's been extensively developed since then. There are links to pre-order the Stephen Wilson remix and track listings, of course, but further down the page it gets rather more interesting. The page now features extracts from a UK and US tour programme from 1975. Alongside some great photos, there's an interesting band biography to that date, and a set of fascinating individual biographies, including a lot of information I hadn't seen before, about education, awards, influences, and something called career progress. There's also a rogues gallery of the Yes crew, and details about Eddie Offord and lighting engineer Michael Tate. A complete Donald Lemkle, if that's how you pronounce his name, essay is reproduced as well, and his poem, which was printed on the original album sleeve. Finally, three parts of the legendary QPR concert are made available as YouTube videos above one of the Instagram photo montages, which fans can contribute to with the hashtag #YesRelayer. Overall, it's a great page full of interesting facets of the album and makes a great complement to the YMP's own mini-series. This week's episode is indeed mini. I had intended to look at each of the three tracks on Relayer, but in fact I'm only going to have time to look at Gates of Delirium. Here's part of what I said about Gates way back in episode 8. The instrumental introduction undeniably has a Yes feel. In fact, when I first heard this album I had no idea this was a different keyboard player. There are characteristic keyboard effects, not identical in style to something like the opening to Close to the Edge, but definitely in classic Yes style. There's a combination of the same generic kinds of keyboard tones as Wakeman uses, including, if you listen really carefully, the blending in of Hammond organ, very subtly. If you were to play the opening of Relayer to someone with a general knowledge of the sound of the band, they would surely be able to identify it as Yes. Maybe this is partly down to the archetypal Steve Howe running guitar part, the shimmering cymbals, the Squire bass line, the patchwork of differently paced short sections, but it's also definitely down to the keyboard effects and treatment. You also get a feeling straight away that Patrick Meraz is higher in the mix, is integrated better than some of the Wakeman keyboard parts on Tales. He seems very much part of the band, very much involved in the creation of the opening of the album. Stand and Fight We Do Consider, sings Anderson. It's a bouncy little tune with Meraz providing very much the same kind of melodic counterpoint to the vocal line as I would expect from Wakeman. There are also echoes of the Howe-Wakeman melodic interactions. Meraz also rivals Wakeman in terms of his keyboard dexterity. The lines are just as fast and intricate. The song moves into rockier territory. It's nice to hear a bit of rocking out after the comparative seriousness of Tales. Howe and Squire are particularly effective with another huge repeating bass line supporting a soloing Howe at times. Here it's Howe in more modest mode than on Tales, I think. One more aspect of Yes's use of extreme contrasts must be mentioned here. The lyrics to the first part of The Gate of Delirium are all about fighting, war and killing. Our gods awake in thunderous roars, sings Anderson. This is biblical Old Testament-style language. Clearly, if you look further on in the piece, you can see that there is a direct contrast to this in the words of the Soon section, and I'm sure this is deliberate. Another example of a violent or disturbing opening to a piece, counterbalanced by a quieter, more peaceful section later. However, more interesting than the lyrical contrast, I think, is the fact that the musical accompaniment to these violent lyrics is not that disturbing, not that dark in tone and mood. Yes, it's quick and in places a bit raucous and strident, but generally the feel is quite upbeat, the general tonality bright and sparkling, which is in quite stark contrast to the lyrics. There's some great sparring between Meraz and Howe, but it's almost joyous, particularly in Meraz's passages. I'm left wondering why this might be. It's as if that famous helicopter scene from Apocalypse Now had been accompanied not by Wagner's Ride of the Valkyries, but by Fauré's Pavane, or Darth Vader marching around the Death Star to Dance of the Sugarplum Fairy, rather than John Williams' rather more sombre and threatening treatment. Okay, I'm going a bit over the top, but I do find the juxtaposition of the lyrics and instrumental parts a little odd. If I ignore what Anderson is actually saying, then it works fine for me. In fact, I love the piece. It's full of excitement, energy, and superb playing from the whole band. Squire's soaring bass lines intertwine with Howe as brilliantly as in any Yes music. There's a section around 10 to 12 minutes where Alan White empties and presses into service the entire contents of the percussion cupboard, like on Tales, and it's expertly added to enhance the mood. Also listening very carefully at this point, do I detect another instance of the use of crowd noise to make the music seem to be live. The music is breathtaking in its intensity, creativity, and energy, and its forward motion is irresistible. Another track to avoid playing in the car. Everything grows to the extended and climactic keyboard theme at around 12 minutes 50. This is Yes at their spine-tingling best. The theme is repeated and elaborated by Howe, with Squire's pulsating and explorative line beneath. Howe climbs into the stratosphere, and the mood finally changes and prepares for the next section. Howe performs the first rendition of the Soon theme, which is then taken up by Anderson. Clearly this is meant to be a complete contrast to the preceding section, and it works wonderfully well. A beautiful, memorable melody soars above the muted accompaniment, including an acoustic guitar being strummed, presumably by Anderson himself. Howe has a long high solo, exploring the melody in different ways, and keyboards support with washes of strings-like sound. The song is initially without pulse, but gradually White joins in and the music becomes a little more insistent, and then moves towards a peaceful conclusion. It's a piece which hangs together wonderfully well, and feels much more self-contained and homogeneous than some of Tales. Perhaps this is due to no small part to the fact that it is a whole band composition. I now know a lot more about what's going on in this track, thanks to the authors of the various Yes books I have on my shelf. Interestingly, Scott O'Reilly only talks about the Gates of Delirium in his book Yes and Philosophy. Perhaps this is because the first track on the album has a great deal to interest a philosopher. As you probably know, this piece is actually inspired by War and Peace by Tolstoy, which John Anderson was reading at the time he composed The Gates of Delirium. Patrick Mraz recalls in the John Kirkman Interviews book that he spent a weekend with John Anderson working on ideas for Gates, but also played Monopoly and watched the television coverage of the Nixon impeachment. There was talk about the Tolstoy book, but also Mraz showed Anderson some science fiction comic books, so the concept for the track emerged from a variety of sources, it seems. David Watkinson, in his book Yes, Perpetual Change, says the decision was taken early on to restrict Anderson's epic concept for this track to one side of a single album, after the adverse reaction to the scale of Tales from Topographic Oceans. And that wasn't the only change on Gates of Delirium. Renowned for their positive and life-affirming content and approach, it's initially surprising to hear Yes's lyrics and approach in Gates. Its jazz-rock fusion, with more harsh lyrical style, contrasts markedly with what Watkinson calls the utopian approach of previous albums. O'Reilly describes the track as harsh, dark, and at times discordant. There were challenging moments in Tales, but aspects of Gates are in a different mould altogether. Of course, this is unsurprising, as it's a song about the human fascination with war and its seductive, destructive consequences. In the grand tradition of certain branches of popular music from the earliest times, this could be seen as John Anderson and Yes's version of a protest song. It's anti-war, while at the same time depicting the savagery and deprivation of the reality. Bill Martin, in his book Music of Yes, points out the connection of Gates with Roger Deans' cover painting. Unlike the artwork for Heaven and Earth, which seems to have predated the album, Martin argues that in the grey tones of the Relayer cover, Dean is deliberately reflecting the depravity of the subject matter of the Gates of Delirium. Just as Anderson is telling a specific story of war, Dean depicts the soldiers on horseback, riding down into the earth and into battle, with the snake representing the pervading sense of evil in war. This is an interesting way of looking at the cover of Relayer, but I've always admired the attractiveness of the painting, and perhaps that's the point. It emphasises the brilliance of Dean in creating a work which encapsulates the dark themes of Gates in a work of beauty, war, and peace. Typically, the music in The Gates of Delirium is seen here to consist of something substantial, something worthwhile. It's not just sound contrived to amuse. It's concerned with what Prefab Sprout memorably pointed out in the 1980s, there's more to life than cars and girls. Martin takes the song to be a plea to humanity not to lose its moral bearings in the midst of the unavoidable necessity of military action. He describes how the instruments wielded by the band gradually turn into weapons, led by Steve Howe's lead guitar axe. When the transformation is complete, Anderson is revealed as a balladeer and a preacher. He points out the explanation Anderson gives as to why the army have assembled, and highlights the almost joyous nature of the accompaniment as it approaches the battle. Assuming this effect is intentional, it's a masterstroke. It describes the euphoria of the soldiers after Henry V's Eve of Agincourt speech, the bizarre human experience of war which O'Reilly mentions as a heightened form of experience. For those of us who have never experienced battle, this all seems alien and unbelievable. But here Yes are describing the reality of the human experience of preparing for war, whilst not glorifying it. John Anderson confirms in Tim Morse's book, Yes Stories, that he did indeed have sections of a specific story in mind. He sets out a prelude, a charge, a victory tune, and peace at the end. He also points out that Gates is meant to be an emotional description of war, rather than explaining or denouncing it. In the same book, Alan White says he wrote most of the music for the battle scene, and Chris Squire explains that Anderson wrote some of the words to fit in with the music, rather than the other way round. Again, it seems like this is a really whole band composition. During the battle section, Martin describes the alternating 3-4 and 4-4 time signatures, suggesting that the waltz feel of 3-4 refers to a kind of dancing with a partner which occurs in battle. He goes on to imagine the different sections as triumphalist utterances of the leaders, periods of calm in camp, or marching. Martin compliments Alan White's virtuosic drumming, which he says is nothing like simple thumping, but is a carefully and deliberately orchestrated part. This means that White is now the equal of the other musicians, creating an equal share of the piece, which was sketched out by Anderson but fleshed out by the rest of the band. Not universally popular, the last section of the piece, rudely extracted for concert performance and single release, is Soon, and here Anderson provides the archetypal Yes, denouement. After the horror of war, he is saying that humankind has the capacity to emerge on the other side. O'Reilly describes it as achingly beautiful, managing to be both mournful and yet deeply hopeful at the same time. Anderson affirms his belief that humans have the capacity to overcome evil, to soar to new heights, to find and use the keys to ascension. This is the genius of Yes music, encapsulated in a few minutes of intense, immersive listening. With the mention of light and its connection with the sun, or even perhaps the Son of God, Anderson intertwines pagan, humanist, and Christian traditions to create an overarching and deeply affecting message. As O'Reilly puts it, out of the depths of despair comes wisdom.
I've heard all Yes Music podcasts every week. I love to hear what Kevin says. I've heard all Yes Music podcasts every week. I love to hear what Kevin says.
So that's just about all the time I have this week. Thanks so much for listening once again. I'll be back next week with some more analysis of the other tracks on Relayer. But in the meantime, please do get involved by subscribing to the podcast via your podcatcher or web service of choice at yesmusicpodcast.com, and let me know if you can't find the Yes Music Podcast where you'd like to listen. Leave a comment on the blog, send a tweet or direct message to @YesMusicPodcast on Twitter, send an email to show@YesMusicPodcast.com, or follow Yes Music Podcast on Instagram. You can upload an audio file or record a voice message via the buttons on the site, or you can leave a voicemail on 0844 579 6949 using the mailbox number 39417. So until next week, just remember, whatever your progressive rock question, the answer is yes.